You know that wellness goal you set at the start of the year? It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS.
Hello and welcome to Future Projection. This is episode 164 of the show. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined by Ben Badler. What's up, Ben?
To be honest, I am a little bit tired. My son was up all night, so I didn't really sleep well. But I also didn't lose my $3.5 million a year job for having a reported inappropriate relationship with my sister-in-law. So I don't know. It could be a lot worse, you know. It's baseball.
Things could always be worse. I'm tired as well, but I'm not tired because my child kept me up all night. I'm tired because I've been watching a lot of baseball, traveling around the country. So
yeah,
it's a great tired to have, Ben.
How was Texas?
It was awesome. You know, I got away from the snow. I got to see our top ranked high school player in the class, and he did top ranked high school player in the class things, Grady Emerson, out in Texas. And that was kind of an appetizer to 3 full days of sitting in Globe Life Field and watching some of the best college teams, some of the best college players in the country. And it's always a wonderful feeling to be watching real live baseball, and we've done it. We're here. Action is happening on the field. I mean, that does come with some injury news that we've gotten already this year, which is unfortunate, but I feel like everything is flying now. We got college players, we got reclassifications, we got commitments happening, we got injuries. It's all happening right now, Ben. So it's good times.
Yeah. So what was going on in Texas? There's a big college tournament there. Who were the teams? What was going on out there?
Yeah. So basically, for the first week, for the last 3 or 4 years, I have gone out to the Shriners Children's College Showdown that has been hosted at the Rangers Globe Life Field. And that basically takes 6 of the top college teams in the country. This year was TCU, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech. And who's the last team I'm blanking on here?
You say TCU?
Did I not say TCU? Yeah, TCU. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
TCU is. Oh, Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's a team I didn't say. Those are the 6 teams we watched. So that, again, like this college tournament is always one of the best. And for the first 3 weeks of Texas, really, you can't go wrong being in that state because there are a lot of high school baseball tournaments that are happening the first 3 weeks of the season. And so out there, it's just different how they do sports. But it'll be like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, high school baseball tournaments. And so especially on Thursdays before the big aces are throwing on Fridays in college baseball, there'll be games going on all day, really, on the high school side. Like, the kids are not in class the whole day. They're just playing these tournaments. So it's a different setup if you're not familiar with how Texas does their high school baseball. And every year it feels like the Dallas area in particular is pretty good for high school baseball, but in particular, this 2026 class is loaded in that area. So I would have liked to see Savion Sims throw, but the day he was scheduled to throw was Saturday and it was like super rained out. So I was just staying inside Globe Life. But the college tournament, even if there was no high school action going on, it is also worth traveling to because we had a number of first round college players from like the college baseball landscape. Is obviously a must watch tournament. We had a number of ranked teams in the event. And I mean, on the site, I have 2 stories basically not lining up, but going over notes for all the priority players that we saw, both for 2026 eligibles. And there were also a number of 2027 and 2028 eligible players. So, I mean, part of me wants to shake things up and find another place to go for week 1, because it's become a bit of a routine. But also at the end of the day, I'm just trying to see the best players I can. And this tournament is always kind of the best for that.
Yeah. How many scouts were there? Well, I guess how many scouts were there at Globe Life, would you say? And then how many scouts would you say were at Grady Emerson's game when you were there?
Oh, man. For Globe Life, hard to say because I was on the open side for the majority of that game. Jacob had a nice cushy little suite set up behind the plate. So he was getting like behind the catcher and getting video pitchers. And I was watching a lot of the hitters from the open side. And the way it works at Globe Life is you can reserve seats from basically from dugout to dugout in the lower bowl are reserved seating. And there are a lot of scouts who sit lined up behind the plate. And I know some of those scouts have like actually assigned seats that they paid to get there and can actually sit there. But there are a lot of other scouts who don't have assigned seats and they're kind of running the risk of, oh, do I sit in this spot? And if someone comes and has this ticket, I have to move mid-game. If you're outside of the like dugout to dugout sections, it's open seating. So if you get there early, take your seat and get there. So I basically got a good open side look for left-handed hitters and was perched there the whole weekend. But I mean, there are a ton of scouts behind the plate. There are a lot of guys down in the suites below. I'm sure there are a number of other guys up both lines. Like I was sitting in a scout section. I had a handful of guys. I feel like I'm not good at like ballparking the numbers there. Grady Emerson, there were maybe more than a dozen down the line on his open side. And then there were a number of other guys sitting behind the plate for both his doubleheaders. So I don't know exactly how many numbers were, but it was pretty well scouted for both events.
Yeah, it was somebody like Grady Emerson too. Like if you're picking 28th, I don't know. I'm sure you want to like make sure you get eyes on him, and I'm sure the area right. scout will go in and see him for those teams that are picking in the 20s, because I guess you never know, and you just want to have your
right.
homework done on him. But like, I don't know, probably not a big priority to have your national cross checker and your scouting director come in and see the number two draft prospects in the country. Yeah.
I always wonder about those two because. The fact that Grady was playing a doubleheader the day before this college tournament happened just makes it easy for those higher level guys who are coming in just to, you may as well go see him because you're coming in
get a lot
for
the
week.
Bats too,
and
yeah.
so, yeah. So even if it's not like a priority, it's just the convenience factor and you're getting the at bats. And I did joke with some scouts who were there who are not at all picking close to where I would expect Grady to come off the board. I'm like, what are you even bothering with this for? And they're like, oh, you know, come see him, then work further down my list, make sure I've got it. Like you said, kind of done your homework. They're kind of aware of the fact that they're unlikely to get a player of that caliber, but you do need to have updated reports, obviously, for everyone in your area. So at some point, you got to go see them because, to your point, you never really know what can happen. But I would expect that as we kind of move throughout the spring, the people who are going to be there consistently are going to be all the teams picking inside like the top 10. And beyond that, guys are going to be prioritizing other players and trying to spend their time in ways that are probably more impactful for who's actually going to be on the board. I'll be back in Texas and not for week 2, but for week 3. And hopefully I'll add some other high school players, maybe Trey Rangel, Cole Cunninger. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to get Savion Sims. I don't think he's scheduled to throw when I'm going to be there, but no shortage of high school players to get looks at out there in Texas.
Yeah. How'd Grady look for you? Is he good still?
He's still good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't really change my opinion of him either positively or negatively. He kind of was the exact player I expected him to be. And maybe saying he didn't change my opinion of him positively sounds like it's shade, but he's the number 2 ranked player in the class and the top overall player in the high school class. And the fact that he kind of just looked the part is a good thing. And I was curious to see what Jacob Rudner, our college writer, this was the first time he saw him in person. So I was very excited to see like what Jacob would think, because he drafted him in our amateur player draft with his first overall pick, and just had mostly heard about him and talked with scouts about him and seen video. And it's always fun to see just highly coveted players like that for the first time. And I mean, you've been to a number of high school games, Ben, you know how it goes. Sometimes you go there and the player gets pitched around or he gets intentionally walked. And if it's one game, you're maybe looking at 3 ABs at times in the high school game. That's just 7 innings. But we got 7 at-bats between 2 games. He got hits in 6 of those ABs. He popped 1 ball up. Otherwise, it was squared up contact, a triple, a pair of doubles. Just looked like one of the best pure hitters in the country. I mean, I kind of expected him to perform at that level because he's not. The competition he saw that day wasn't great. I think he faced significantly better competition over the summer, just in terms of like the velocity he was facing. But
oh, yeah.
he did what you'd expect him to do in that scenario. I wish we got maybe a few more in between defensive opportunities for him at shortstop, because he had a number of fairly routine plays that I think he handled perfectly well, converted all the plays, showed off his big arm. Maybe the one tool I'm kind of curious what you think about for Grady is the run tool. You know, in the past, he's shown plus run times. I thought he was more of like a solid average or 55 runner in this look. I'm curious if you think he's slowed down or if you've just seen him faster, if you're more bullish on the speed. But I view Grady as having like a 60 hit and a 60 arm. And then the other tools I think are more solid average or 55s. Not that that's bad. That's a great. Sometimes I think when you talk about average tools or 55 tools, people can like downplay how good that actually is. But
I actually think
incredibly well-rounded player.
I think the word average, I don't think he's an average. I think it's probably 55, 60 runner. But I think the word average, when we use it, is might be one of the most misunderstood words that we use. Because me, even just in the broader context of the English language, when people hear the word average or you use the word average to describe something, they tend to use it to describe something that's actually below average. Like,
right.
Like, how was the food? Like, I don't know. It was like average, but they really mean like, oh, like it wasn't a good meal. Right. Or
right.
When they talk about something else being average, what they really mean is it wasn't very good. But when we use average, we're talking about the context of a major league player. This guy is has an average arm for a major league infielder right now. Right. And again, I think Grady has a better than average arm, but just using average in that context, where we say, hey, this guy has average raw power. If we're talking about, you know, whether it's a 16-year-old international player or a, you know, a high school player having average raw power right now, like, no, that's actually like really good for that age. We're saying it's already major league average. I think, you know, like when you get to maybe other places, they maybe use the term differently as far as what is average. But when we're talking about average, we're talking about on the 2080 major league scouting scale. We're not saying, oh, well, it's just like, you know, your average high school arm or your average high school this or that or college.
Even. Right.
Like, that's not the way we're using the term. But yeah.
I'm glad you reinforced that, because that is always frustrating to me. And even not talking about like the context of major league average and just how people use scales in general to rank things in like day-to-day life, it does really feel like at this point most people just use the 1 to 10 scale, and if it's anything lower than a 7, it's just bad. Like it's 7 or above is what's actually good or interesting, and 7 feels like the actual average that people use in real life. So the way we talk about average in general, I agree entirely with everything you said. And it's just so worth reinforcing that if you were a player in high school who has 550 tools, you have average tools across the board. That is a tremendous compliment to the talent that you have, because you're being compared to major league players.
Or even if you are a major league player and you have, you know, you're an average runner, that's not, we're not saying you're slow. Like that's,
yes.
You are at the, you know, the math doesn't work exactly this way, but like roughly the 50th percentile runner, right? I think Grady Emerson is an above average, you know, 55 to 60 grade runner, but also, I don't know. It doesn't really like, is he a little bit faster than average? Is he more than like, it doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is how good of a hitter he is, and that I think he can play shortstop. There might be some more disagreement on shortstop. I know there was when he was younger. I never really had much question about his ability to play shortstop.
Again, though. I wish I saw him make a few more in-between plays. I thought his first step was really good, and I think his first step allows his range to maybe play up from his pure speed. His hands seem super reliable to me. Like he just seems to make all the plays. And again, I think the arm is a really loud tool for him. Every time I see him throw across the diamond, it's got great carry and power and accuracy.
It's a really smart, instinctive player too.
Yeah. So I think that there's no like glaring concerns for me about him not being able to play the position, as I put it. Now, Jacob came away wondering, oh, okay, like, is he going to get a little too big for the position? He's a little more down on the speed and like thinks, oh, maybe he'll play third base. So maybe he'd be kind of more in the camp of people you're talking about. But I think that there's nothing he does defensively that makes me think, oh, he can't play the position at shortstop. And I think having watched him last summer as well, to seeing him get an opportunity to make a number of more challenging plays, I just think he'll he'll make all the plays that you'd expect a big league shortstop to make. Now, is he going to be a 70 or an 80 defender like Billy Carlson was a year ago? No, I don't think so. But every shortstop prospect who sticks at the position does not have to be a 70 grade defender. And I think he can be a very good shortstop defender at the position with all the tools he has now.
Billy Carlson hitting BP bombs in live.
Oh, was he? I didn't see that.
The other day. Yeah.
Does the swing look any different or does it look the same?
It's just like he posted it on his Instagram. off I forget who he hit it off. Some minor league pitcher, I think, in the organization. But
some bum.
It was a center field camera angle. It looked nice from center field. I don't know. I like him. We'll see. But yeah, great. I mean, but Grady's calling card is obviously the bat, right? Like it always has been. He's been our number one high school player in that class for like 2 years. Never moved him off that. Thought about it at one point when Jacob Lombard was like, man,
right?
I have no doubt.
Right, if you're looking
him.
For plus tools, go look at Jacob Lombard. Yeah,
yeah, outstanding tools, athleticism. If anybody doesn't think he can play shortstop, I don't know what they're thinking. Probably very few people who think that. But you know, I would say certainly more swing and miss questions with him compared to Grady Emerson. Whereas Grady is
for
just
sure.
Like, what you saw is what he does every single timeout. I mean, and mechanically the swing is just so textbook, right? Like it's just so short, inefficient, and stays through the hitting zone and doesn't matter. Like there's no holes in it.
He really lets the ball travel too. And I feel like at the high school level, when you're facing like upper 70s, low 80s pitching for a player who has the sort of bat speed that Grady does, like I could imagine just a more disciplined or a less disciplined hitter just like getting out in front of everything and yanking the ball to the pull side and trying to show power. But he has such a natural ability to use the entire field. It's really impressive. And even the way his lower half works, like it's like when he hits a ball to left center, to the opposite field, everything is just so balanced in his swing. And he just feels like the sort of pure hitter who is never trying to do too much, and he always barrels the ball and hits it on a live. And like kind of, I feel like this gets overused, but he does hit the ball where it's pitched a lot. And I think that's like a great skill that he has that's really hard to teach or to naturally do at the plate. And just without even like selling out for power or having the lower half be geared to like yanking the ball, he had one pitch where he kind of just flicked his wrist and it was a deep ball pulled to the right center gap that I'm not sure exactly how far it was from the fence, but it wouldn't have taken too much more power for him to have just homered. But I definitely can see him just kind of naturally growing into maybe sneakier power than people might expect for him. I don't know if you think he's more of like a solid, like 50 grade in-game power projection for you, or if it's more 55.
Average, would you say? Yeah.
Yeah. Just average, unfortunately. But, he feels like the sort of hitter who's just barrel feel is going to allow him to get to every bit of the power he has if he chooses to try to maybe tap into that more in the future. And again, I think there are a number of players who I would prefer them to not, because I just think their hitting instincts are so good. I'd rather you just use the whole field, and singles and doubles are great too. But man, he is a player who always looks in control of every single at-bat that he takes. And that was definitely the case last week when I saw him.
Yeah, everything he does in the box just looks so loose and relaxed and balanced and comfortable. He swings like he's yawning, right? Like there's just no
that's a good
effort
line.
There. It's, yeah, and I'm borrowing that from scouts who've used it before. I wish I could take credit, but
that's a good one.
Yeah, the description definitely fits him. And yeah, he never, even in BP, he doesn't want to stray from his approach, which is a very good, very polished approach. And you're right. There is, as good as the pure hitting ability is, there is bat speed in there. He just, it's not his style to try to like let it loose and try to like rip it and try to hit for power, try to swing for the fences right now. As he gets older, as he gets stronger, I think you will see more power. I think there's certainly enough in there to project, you know, 15 to 20 home runs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up, you know, 20-25 and maybe, you know, pop some 30 plus seasons in there.
Do you view him as a similar like hitter to Max Clark? in terms of power potential? I think just the way you described Max Clark in the past sounds similar to Grady. I don't know that their hit power combos would be too different.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely some similarities to there, to him. You know, very different physically than a Kevin McGonigal, but it's like that kind of, you know, and Clark has that kind of bat to ball skill too. I think Clark has some similarities to Grady as a hitter. I mean, both elite high school players. When I'm curious too, when you're watching Grady Emerson, I mean, when we're watching him in the summer, you know, if he's playing for his travel team, you know, when he's with the Canes, you know, they're usually playing in like big tournaments. So he's facing good arms there, usually guys who are throwing at least like, you know, 88 plus miles an hour on a 90 plus mile an hour arms. When he's going to bigger events like area codes or USA trials, that kind of stuff, like he's facing really good arms, or, you know, really good high school arms, guys who were draft picks, guys who were throwing, you know, 94 or 95, like a Coleman Borthwick's and Gio Rojas's of the world. So you're seeing him face, you know, good righties, good lefties. And he always hit those guys, which is why you have so much confidence in him as a hitter. But when you're, you know, maybe Grady Emerson is probably the worst example for this question. because you just already have so much confidence in his hitting ability. But when you're seeing, when you're trying to evaluate a high school hitter where you have a certain track record over the summer, and maybe it's, you know, maybe it's from a guy who struggled somewhat over the summer, and they're facing guys that are throwing, I mean, I don't know what he was facing that day, but, you know, guys are probably throwing maybe 75 mile an hour fastballs, 81, right? Like not great pitching, like, you know, obviously like well below what you would see in a, you know, even like a Division II college game. You know, how tough is it to evaluate players in that environment, or change your thoughts on a player?
Yeah, I feel like that would be one of the hardest things to scout, to be honest with you. Like, I really always wonder how scouts have conviction, especially, I think you're right, Grady is a tough player to have this conversation around. But if you do have a player who struggled against the premium pitching throughout the summer, has a lot of swing and miss tendencies, and just really looked overmatched throughout the summer, then you come watch them in the spring and they just look a lot better. They're making more contact. They're impacting the ball. They're driving the baseball.
Like, swinging I'm a sure, metal bat too.
Yeah, metal bat. So much greater margin for error in terms of flush contact, in terms of missing the barrel, being out in front, on the hands. Like, there are a lot of players, and you see this in college a ton. We call these players metal bat merchants. But if you can make a lot of bad contact and just be strong and hit the ball a long ways in college baseball because you got metal bats, you don't get that margin for error with wood. So I think this is why it's the trickiest thing to evaluate in the spring. Like, how much of those improvements are the player actually improving as a pure hitter, or just beating up on worse competition? I imagine you'll get tons of different thoughts on how scouts go about it, but it'd be hard for me to believe that you could have a player who really struggled throughout the summer and then goes to an area in the high school during the spring and goes off, and you're not constantly kind of conflicted and going back and forth and saying, okay, like, I know he did all this, but like, you would expect a talented player to beat up on bad high school pitching. And so I think generally it's more about, at least if you're having like confidence in material changes, I feel like it's things like the bat speed or the mechanics of a swing. If like part of your concern with a hitter was there was a lot going on mechanically, or he was getting really barred out and that was preventing him from getting the bat head extended, and you're seeing some improvements in those areas during the spring, you maybe can feel a little bit more confident that they've improved in some area that will then translate to better pitching and to better competition. Maybe it was a strength concern you had for the player, and so you can see them physically. If they've had a really good offseason, they just look bigger. So I think some of those traits are probably more telling than the actual performance and the actual contact skills you're seeing in high school. And this is also why I think teams put so much weight and stock into the contact ability throughout the summer, and you don't really ever hear about it in the high school season. Like, there are some players,
unless it goes the opposite direction.
Right, yeah, that'd be a big concern. Right. James
Wood, when he was at IMG Academy, which is probably the
best. I was about to bring him up because I feel like there are some high schools where you maybe can read some into the data and the performance from the spring because you are just consistently playing high level competition. IMG Academy does this every year. There are players in Florida that the competition is just at a higher level, so you can feel
Southern
more confident.
California too.
I mean, it sounds like Grady Emerson kind of downgraded his competition with the transfer he made in high school this year. So I'm not sure exactly what the level of talent he'll be facing this spring. But if a guy like Grady Emerson went out and struggled, I think that would be concerning. Like it'd be a lot easier to have concerns.
I would be concerned with where, myself over, yeah.
Right. With where your hit tool is going. If you do poorly versus the opposite, a lot of it can just be chalked up to, okay, like you should, like if you're playing college baseball, you should be dominating your competition. So I think that is why just evaluating hit tool is so difficult. I don't know. How do you think through it? I kind of gave you a lot of thoughts on how I do. Do you have any different thoughts on how you would do it?
I'm trying to think of guys who've like high school hitters who moved up just because they were like killing it in the spring in terms of performance.
Well, one who didn't really move up, but the way Connor Griffin was talked about, like he was in the number one spot throughout the cycle. Like he didn't have a great summer. He entered the spring with questions about his hit tool, but like we did hear that he made improvements to his swing during the spring and he dominated his competition.
Right.
And he comes from like maybe the most critical area in the country in terms of performance that's just not valued or competition that's not as valued in Mississippi.
You see some Mississippi high school hitters put up some pretty cartoonish numbers, even as like freshmen. And you're like, man, what's...
So I do think a lot of the Connor Griffin positive feedback was just the swing itself looked better. And we continue to see and hear that in pro ball. But I am trying to think of another, like Joe Adell maybe is one who stands out. Like he really struggled in the summer. Entering his senior year, and then he went nuclear during the spring in Louisville, I believe. Maybe is another player.
I mean, I think it's a lot of times it is that something material has changed about the player himself more so than, hey, this guy went out and crushed it in terms of the stats and just the performance and the results during his senior season as in the spring. It's more, okay, we had a question mark about this element of his swing, but he has changed his mechanics. He's doing this differently at the plate. Therefore, we think that these new mechanics, this new, you know, set of inputs that he's using in his swing have changed his outlook. Or, hey, this guy's added 15 pounds. He's got more bat speed. The ball is coming off his bat hotter now. We're seeing more power, which, you know, can measure.
That would have been Steele Hall. The strength is a good, he's a great example of a recent player who just added a lot of strength and that like really changed his offensive profile.
Yeah. And you can better measure that now too than you could have 5 years ago, whether you bring a player in for a workout, measure his exit velocities off the track, man, or just, you know, you go to his high school game and just say like, hey, can you take BP with this blast sensor on the bat?
And you've got you got a handful of teams who are, or at least were, I don't know if they're allowed to with the new rules now, but had their force plate guys going out, taking those two players and doing athletic testing. So if you have like significant changes in the counter move jump or whatever they call it on your force plate testing, maybe you feel like, hey, we can quantify the actual strength gains that you've made here. We think this will translate to
this guy was running 6'8" before, and now we're getting him, you know, run 6'6" or 6'5" or something.
Or literally the oldest way in the book, hey, this guy looks a lot stronger. I talked to him. He said he really crushed the gym. He was lifting X. Now he's lifting Y. He's been eating. Like he looks like a physically different player. I remember the first time I saw a player who like looked, and this was just over video, but I remember watching Bobby Wood Jr. all throughout high school. And he was like a lean, kind of lanky, like he had tons of room to fill out. And then it was like his first season of pro ball, I think. I remember seeing him and be like, that is not at all the player that I saw a year ago, 2 years ago. He had added so much strength. You could just, it was obvious how much stronger he was. And sometimes I think it can be as simple as that. Hey, you look a lot more physical and you've grown into your body and your frame in a good way. That's probably going to change some tools at a certain level.
That happens all the time internationally to the point. There was a player, I remember there was a player, I was at a showcase and there was a player on the roster, William Lugo, and he ended up signing with the Mets eventually. But I looked at the roster, seeing this kid come up to bat, and he's like, I don't know, like 6'3", 6'4". he's huge. I'm like, that's not William Lugo. I went up to the guy running the showcase. And I was like, hey, there's a mistake on the roster. That's not William Lugo. He's like, no, that's him. And I was like, no, it's not him. I saw him. I just saw him like a year ago. He's like a 6 foot, like kind of squatty body guy. He's like, no, that's him. That's like, I wasn't trying to be like make a joke or anything. I was like, I really did not think that was even the same person right. growing like 3 or 4 inches mm-hmm. or something. Right. Like O'Neill Cruz was, probably the Dodgers, probably when the Dodgers originally agreed to sign him, I think he was like 6'1". By the time he signed, he was 6'4". And obviously now he's like, 6'7" or, mm-hmm. pushing 6'8". Right. So, that's another thing. Like guys can just grow, maybe don't see it as much from like, your junior, summer.
After yeah.
Your
junior, typically it feels like freshman, sophomore year of high school. Yeah. So we kind of have, we've
guys
missed
still grow
most
from
of
like
the
sophomore to junior year or even junior to senior year, but probably not to that mm-hmm. extreme amount.
Yeah, the late stage growth spurt guys are always really fascinating to hear about because it just weren't common. But
seems like we actually then height and weight, like we actually physically, or the teams will physically measure the guys, and if anything, they might get a little bit shorter when they
I would like for the teams to actually like publish the updated height and weights each year, because it does feel like for a lot of these players they just don't bother to put those numbers out. I like when it always happens in the international guys, it's like their signing date height and weight sticks with them for the next 3 or 4 years. I'm like, okay, this guy's not 165 pounds anymore.
Oh, well, I mean, when the players do the self-reported heights and weights.
Yeah, yeah. I like how players
6 foot 175.
In high school.
No, you're 5'10". That's
well,
all right.
It's funny too.
I don't care.
You'll ask players this at the field. Like I've had this happen multiple times. I'm kind of just talking with a player, ask about, I don't know how it's brought up, but you'll ask about like player's height or something, and they'll say with or without cleats. Yeah. So they clearly like to measure themselves in cleats. And it is very common in high school. There are a lot of places where you can self-report your height and weight. And there are some events where they'll actually measure you. It's always nice to get that actual information and see who has the biggest delta there. And in college, it's obviously no secret that all these guys are exaggerated in their heights. It's funny when you have them signed, the height mysteriously changes for like 80% of the players, and it's just a little bit shorter. Yeah. So
what about on the college side though? I know you, like you said, you saw a bunch of the best college players. How much do you take away from that first weekend of the year in college baseball? Cause it is one weekend, right? Like it's a small sample. And it's very early in the year. Guys are just getting going. But also, it is our most up-to-date looks that we've had on these guys since, whether it's talking about the last summer or the fall, or in some cases, maybe since, June, May last year?
Yeah.
So a lot can change.
Yeah, for the college players, I feel like it is a lot more meaningful seeing their performance early in the year. I mean, you do have to keep in mind, especially for hitters, like, hey, this is 3 games. So you're getting like 10 to 18, 10 to 20 at bats from players. So that's a pretty good sample. So I feel like for me, for a lot of the players, it's kind of my first time bearing down on them, maybe in multiple years, depending on what they did in the summer, depending on like what teams they were playing on. If they were on a team where I was watching a previous draft prospect who's graduated or been signed, maybe I'm more familiar with them. But a lot of times for me, it is like getting a first good look at a player with any real focus on bearing down on them in multiple years. And I do think that you can, after watching a series, you can walk away with a pretty good feel for a player's offensive approach at the plate. Are they passive? Are they aggressive? Do you feel like they have a good understanding of the zone? Can they pick up spin? You can get a good feel for the raw power they have from batting practice. You can get hopefully a decent feel for like how they move around in the field. I feel like depending on where a player is playing, having a lot of confidence in what their fielding ability is maybe the trickiest, because you can kind of see arms in and out, but especially for outfielders, the in and out outfield for the fielding tool does very little. And so you want to see them challenged on balls. So for me, I'm really trying to bear down on like, what's the offensive approach here? What do the tools look like? And for players that I'm more familiar with, it's like, I kind of go in with an expectation of what they're going to be. And when they do not live up to that expectation or they're different from that expectation, I feel like it's, at first it's just interesting to note. And I kind of make a point to like think through like why that might be. I think one example of this was Logan Hughes, Texas Tech outfielder. He's a corner outfielder, really impressive raw power. His underlying batted ball data was among the best in the class. A year ago, he hit 19 home runs. And I felt like his opening weekend was kind of disappointing relative to my expectations, in particular the approach offensively. I felt like he wasn't picking up spin out of the hand really well. There was more swing and miss than I would have expected for someone with his career strike. I think his career strikeout rate is something like 12 to 14%, like a pretty modest strikeout rate. And so for him, I'm wondering, okay, is he just worse of a pure hitter than I was expecting? Or is this just a case where it's opening weekend, he's still getting his timing back, I don't want to overreact too much? Because I remember watching Chase DeLauder a number of years ago, his opening weekend, he matched up with Florida State, and that Florida State rotation, I think Parker Messick was actually one of the arms in that rotation at the time. And there was another really talented left-hander that year, and he got carved up. He swung and missed a ton. He didn't look good. The swing looked a little bit more rigid and steep than it did in the past. And I was like, okay, like, is this something that we need to actually be concerned about? Or is this just first week he's got to get used to the competition? It was a tough matchup. And so I don't want to read too far into it, but I'm also, I feel like I'm kind of long-winded here, but that's kind of like my thought process when I'm there.
It's kind of our show, sense. Yeah. So
yeah, it's all right.
what about with pitchers, right? Because that to me is where I think you can pretty quickly tell when, at least stuff-wise, if somebody's made a material change to either mm-hmm. either the literally that's the types of pitches that they're right. throwing or the quality of the stuff that's coming out of their hand. Like the command stuff, like Liam Peterson, right, at Florida, he had a rough start in terms of the command, the control that he had. Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, it counts. It's something to monitor. But I'm not like, oh, God, I'm like really worried about Liam Peterson all of a sudden. Whereas if like his stuff looked really down, then I'd say, all right, again, give him like a little bit more time. But I think the stuff looked fine. Whereas then you had guys like Cam Johnson, right? Mm-hmm. Left-handed pitcher at Oklahoma, eligible for this year's draft. He's not on our top 200 draft prospects right now.
Nope.
Because this guy was outstanding prospect in high school. I mean, power arm from the left side, good slider, was one of our highest ranked pitchers in what was a really strong 2023 high school class. And he went to LSU.
Yeah, we ranked him, just pulling it up here to see exactly where he ranked. We ranked him number 43 that year. Overall, he was right behind, overall, number 43 in the class. He was right behind a shortstop from Hamilton High School, Brock Chalowski, at 42.
Happened to him?
Yeah, I remember leading up to the draft, there was a lot of buzz about him potentially going in the back of the first. So I definitely think Cameron Johnson getting to college in the first place had a lot more to do with like signing bonus demands that he maybe had than any sort of like concerns from the industry that he wasn't a talented pitcher.
Yeah, went to LSU and just struggled. Freshman in the SEC, but then sophomore year two, it just wasn't clicking for him. And if you're at LSU and you're not performing, like they're there to win a national championship or try mm-hmm. to win a national championship every year, and if you're not performing, it's not like in
and his performance it wasn't just like mediocre. He threw,
it wasn't average.
He threw as a reliever in 13 games, just 9 innings. He had a 12.00 ERA in that time. He walked 16 of the 50 batters he faced, and he struck out 13. So he walked 16 batters in 9 innings. Not good. Walked more than he struck out. Also not good. And then it's kind of more of the same at Oklahoma his sophomore year as well. It was a few more innings. It was 25 walks and 24 strikeouts. against 109 batters faced, and the ERA was not as unsightly as 12.0, but it was like a 5.57 ERA. He started seven games. He came out of the pen three more. So it really just looked like a player who had a lot of arm talent, but didn't really know where the ball was going for his first 2 years, I'd say.
Yeah, and if you're look, if he had signs out of high school with an MLB team out of the draft, it's like you're not getting shoved into a low A bullpen if you don't perform, right? Like they're going to give you
right.
a lot more rope, a lot more opportunity to just keep going, keep pitching.
100%. Because whereas, to your point, the minor league team, the goal is not to go win a College World Series like at LSU. Like the team, obviously everyone wants to win at any level, but the number one priority is developing players. And so you're going to be put in a position to actually develop. Whereas if you're struggling at a college baseball program that has aspirations to win games and be competitive, you're going to lose time, really valuable development time. And it looks like Kim Johnson may be turning a corner because he was quite good opening weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I'd heard good stuff about him in the fall. Like I heard what basically is going to happen. What did happen was that he's going to be their Friday night starter. And I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right, that's interesting, but also believe it when I see it type deal. Mm-hmm. And just
right. I feel like that too is something you always have to keep in mind, because every year at every college program around the country, all the players look great and they've all added things to their tool set that's exciting. And every pitcher has added a pitch that looks amazing. And you're like, okay, like the first year I was at BA, I maybe took that a little more seriously. And then after you hear it and it like doesn't materialize, you're like, okay, it sounds good. It's good if they have a good fall. Obviously, it's better than having a bad fall. But ultimately, want to see them actually do it in real games when it matters. But yeah, Cam Johnson did get some good chatter. And he did start opening night against Texas Tech. And he was pretty electric. He threw six innings. He struck out 11. Best outing of his college career by far. Walked three. He allowed one unearned run on three hits. And the stuff looked really good. It was interesting because the pitch mix was a lot different than what we saw in high school, Ben, and like why we were so excited about him in high school. I'm not sure what you thought about his changeup in high school, but I remember him basically being a pretty heavy fastball slider pitcher at the time. And it was this right. big sweeping yeah. breaking ball, high spin rates, really exciting pitch. He still throws that. He didn't have much feel for it, much control for it, and he didn't use it a ton. He instead went to what looked like a really good changeup in the mid-80s. It was 84, 88. Got a ton of whiffs, generated a ton of ugly swings. When he was able to locate it down into his glove side against righties, it was a lights-out, knockout pitch. And then he also got double-digit whiffs with his fastball. He was sitting 94, 95, touched 97. So I thought it looked good. It definitely, we still need to see a lot more in terms of command, but I think what he showed this past weekend was still significantly better control and command than what we'd seen of him as a freshman and sophomore. So trending in the right direction there.
Yeah, I would throw Justin Laguernic at Clemson into that kind of same family of 2023 high school left-handed pitchers who were pretty underwhelming their first 2 years, but have looked mm-hmm. really good with noticeably better stuff to start the year. I mean, Laguernic went out at Clemson, his first start out, and he five shutout innings, no walks, six strikeouts. This was a guy who, you know, last year had a 9+ ERA. He's just mm-hmm. struggling to throw strikes. I mean, you saw him in high school and like the summer before, I was like, oh, this guy's young for his class. He's left-handed, like good operation, you know, a ton of physical upside, you know, scraping mm-hmm. the low 90s, but you can see there's a lot more to come. And then the spring, it was very uneven, was getting hit around in New York, not the best competition that he's facing already, mm-hmm. Up in and out with the command, and the velocity hadn't really taken a jump forward. So kind of cost his draft stock, but I mean, you look at him now and it's like, okay, the fastball's jumped like 3 miles an hour this year. So he's up to 97. It's like
averaging 95, right?
Yeah, it's up to 97. He's, you know, throwing from that like really low release height, 18 inches arm side run on average. The slider is like 2,700 RPM. Looks sharp to me. Like, this is the best I've ever seen him. And again, like, this is not a guy who's in our top 200 right now, but, and maybe he doesn't end up there, but it's like, okay, well, what do we make of this guy? I mean, obviously the good thing is we still have another, you know, 5 months to figure that out, and it's a long season to go. But I think especially with pitchers, you can see guys like, bam, like, it can, a lot of things can change quickly for pitchers, probably more so than with hitters.
You know that goal you set at the start of the year? You can still do it. Whether you're committed to a through hike with friends, lifting heavier, or simply walking more, it's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. Because quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, simplify your progress with just 2 scoops of the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS. Ka'Chava.com, code NEWS.
Yeah, and basically how we were talking about our confidence in the actual changes in hitters at the high school level and the college levels, I feel like it's the opposite with pitchers. Like, you can be much more confident in like what has actually changed with pitchers, because they are the players on the field that are kind of like dictating what's happening. They hold the ball, right? And you see, where for a hitter, where I was saying you'll get 10 to 20 ABs depending on like walks and where you're at in the lineup over 3 games. If you watch a pitcher who's making 1 start, you're getting, I mean, maybe early in the season, it's like 40 pitches to 90, but those are like well over 2, 3, 4 times the amount of just reps that you're getting for the pitcher. And whether or not a pitcher is throwing a different pitch from a year ago, or the velocity is significantly different, it's not something that, okay, I need to see him throw this fastball 96, 8 more times to know if it's real. Like, you saw him throw 96 last year, he topped out at 93. You see that once, you're like, okay, he's throwing harder. You see a new breaking ball, you see the sharpness of a breaking ball be more effective, you know it has changed. Even with the control and command, like, you're going to want to see a pitcher throw strikes and command the ball for an extended period of time, making sure that it just wasn't like a one-off game where everything was synced up. But you can, I feel like, have a pretty quick reaction to what a pitcher is doing and compare that to what they're previously doing in a way that is just not really... I mean, you can do it with a hitter, but I would just be far less confident in like the degree to which you're taking it with a hitter compared to a pitcher. So early reactions to pitchers make a lot more sense to me.
Yeah. Who else jumped out to you from the draft guys, or, you know, could be any draft class, I guess, that you saw in Texas on the college side?
I feel like on our draft podcast, we focus on the 2026 eligibles a little bit more, and there are a number of players, like, I'll just mention in passing, guys like Ryder Helfrich, catcher at Arkansas, Colin Parksey, catcher at Vanderbilt, really impressive power and arm strength combos there. Sawyer Strassnyder, we got to see him flash basically all of his tools. And I thought in particular the first few days, his at-bats were competitive and his swing decisions were solid. Jackson Willits at Oklahoma is not the most toolsy player in the world. The older brother of Eli Willits, who was just the first overall pick. But man, every at-bat, I felt like he was locked in. He has these hitterish traits. He makes a lot of contact. Like, yeah, he's not a burner runner. He doesn't have huge power. He doesn't have elite defensive actions, but he makes every play. He looks good while doing it. And I just feel like at a certain point in the draft, that's a player that I would want to have in my org. But I feel like some of the most exciting players of the event were 2027 college names and 2028. I mean, 3 that were maybe showing the loudest tools and upside and just awesome performance were, and we can head in whichever direction you want to go, but Brody Johnson at Vanderbilt, third baseman and one of the more impressive hitters we saw. Noah Franco, outfielder, left-handed pitcher, who at various stages in his high school career was thought of as like a potential first rounder. I think he entered the spring as a top 30 prospect on our board before he just slid a little bit and made it to campus. But he has monstrous power and I think a tremendously talented arm on the mound from the left side. And then maybe the player who I was like most excited about after watching him this weekend was Lucas Franco at TCU, shortstop who did everything, Ben. It was awesome.
We
can go wherever you want. Those three I think would be a lot of fun to talk about.
Well, as soon as you said Lucas Franco, I think we're going to start there because I love Lucas Franco, man. I remember we ranked him our first 25 class? Yeah, 25 list. Mm-hmm. He was top 10 in that class. Was not like a super famous household name at that time by any means. But I was like, man, this guy's got a really good swing. He's like probably 6'2", 6'3", like really lean frame, but a really good-looking left-handed swing. Looked very hitterish. A lot of contact skills, knew the strike zone. Like you could see bigger power coming. Wasn't totally sure if it was going to be shortstop, third base. Like I really liked him all throughout high school. And then seemed like, I don't know. What was your take on what scouts were thinking about him last year in his draft year of high school? Because it seems like they liked him, but maybe not as much as I did.
Right. That definitely seems fair. I mean, every time I talked to a scout about Lucas Franco, they all basically said that he absolutely looked the part. Like he had the actions you want to see from a shortstop. He had a frame you could dream on more power coming, super projectable, a good athlete in the field. The swing itself looked aesthetically pleasing and it worked how scouts wanted it to work. He did control the zone. And then it was always a question of like, yeah, it always looks good. And he never quite delivered in the performances that scouts expected to see from him.
Didn't really dominate the summer.
No, he never dominated the summer. And even in the spring, I think he just showed less, I don't know if it was less power or just they wanted him to hit at a level he just didn't really hit at. But everyone really liked him. And I think there were questions of like, okay, why is he not dominating the way that we think he should? Led to enough questions where he slid a little bit on our board throughout the spring. I think he was ranked... let me see. I've got our rankings here. So the highest we had him ranked, it looks like September 2024, we on our top 100, he was 24. And then he kind of just slid down the board.
On the overall board, yeah.
On the overall board, yeah. I think that's the overall board. Definitely the preseason top 200, he was ranked at 38. But then throughout the year, he just kind of kept falling a little bit. It was 38, 41, 50, 50, 53. Then our final June update, he was 85. And then he wound up withdrawing from the draft. So he wasn't eligible.
That's right.
He was with a number of other guys, Omar Serna, Reagan Ricken, Brady Dallimore, John Paoni. They all withdrew. And so we technically didn't have them ranked to end. But if he didn't withdraw, he would have ranked like 85 around that range. So like third round talent, he did not look like a third rounder this weekend, Ben. He looked awesome. I mean, he turned on a ball. And homered, I was literally talking about him with scouts at the time. They're like, yeah, if Lucas showed us any hints of this during the spring, like we would have all been all over him at the time. But I think maybe the electricity that he showed, I mean, he has added a little bit more physicality and strength already. He's not listed a ton heavier than what he was in high school. It's only been a few months. But I was kind of surprised with the bat speed I saw from him. I don't know if I'm underrating what his bat speed previously was in high school or if he actually has added a significant amount, but he hit basically everything hard his first game. He had four at-bats. It was 96 miles per hour or harder every single time. I thought he was locked in terms of his approach. Swing decisions were good. He stayed within the zone. And it's just a pretty, pretty swing. And defensively, he was maybe the most impressive player at the event. He made every play. He moves around silky smooth. He's confident going to his backhand. He's confident ranging up the middle with the forehand. He's got a big arm. He knows when to let it loose.
He's still 18 years old too, right?
Yep. So he'll be eligible for 2028. He won't be a draft eligible sophomore. And pretty much outside of running, I was excited with him across the board. Like hit, check, power check, fielding check. arm check. Okay, maybe he's an average runner. You know, we hit that average tag, but yeah, he was awesome.
He only went 2 for 11. I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, this is what you get for scouting the box score, people. If you scout the box score and saw 2 for 11, and I don't know, there's probably someone who had a couple of rinky-dink off the cap singles and doubles that you're like, oh, look at this. But no, Lucas Franco, yeah, remember the name.
2 for 11 with like 9 barrels, it sounds like.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll actually pull up my notes and see what his better ball. But I know for a fact the first 4 ABs were 96 miles per hour or harder. It was awesome. Did you get to see him much? I know that was a Flow Sports broadcast, and that one's trickier to watch, and there's so much other stuff to watch that's probably in whatever package you already have.
I went back and watched some of it after hearing some of the buzz, and I thought, yeah, that looks right.
What do you think of that home run swing? Okay, here, first 4 ABs. His first at bat, 88 mile per hour, fastball. He flies out to center, 107 miles per hour, deep to the warning track. So that's an out on the box score, but really impressive AB. Second AB, 87 mile per hour fastball. This is the home run, 113 miles per hour off the bat, estimated 417 feet. Monster shot to right field.
18 years old, hitting 113.
Yeah. And again, it's middle bat in college. I think these college numbers are kind of juiced, but still, like relative to everyone else, it was still one of the more impressive batted balls.
If it was 110, I'd be impressed, yeah.
Third AB, 90 miles per hour, triples backside to like the left center gap, 101 off the bat. Fourth AB, 96 mile per hour fastball, flies out to left, solid contact to the opposite field, 97 miles per hour off the bat. Yeah, everything was great. He struck out once. I think he missed twice the entire week. So, yeah, put me in the bucket of Lucas Franco fan.
I think he's going to be TCU's version of Brendan Lawson, who I also loved in high school.
Yeah, better defender.
And thought, how is this guy getting to campus? And who also hit, did you see the home run? He had a home run over the scoreboard at Florida the other day.
No, I didn't see that one yet. I'll need to pull that
one. I think it was a midweek game. So I'm not saying like the competition was great.
Can't count midweek games.
It doesn't count because I can't find the ball. He's just a really good hitter. I think he's changed his hitting mechanics a little bit, or just like the setup that he has.
Oh, does he still have his, he better not have dropped his hands, because I love the fact that his hands are basically like at the sky before.
He can put them wherever he wants. Once he's ready to pull the trigger, it's in a great position. And I just love the way the barrel comes through the zone. He's our number one prospect in our 2027, at least our college.
I just saw the home run you're talking about.
Yeah.
That was a bomb.
Yeah. They were like, what the? It's like Jack Caglione would hit balls there. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying he's got 80 raw power like Jack does, but better hitter. And I think he's playing shortstop for them too right now. This is just the first season. I don't know. I don't think he's like a major league shortstop, but
there are a couple third basemen currently playing shortstop in college of baseball, and I'm really curious to see how that goes for both of them. Brendan Lawson is playing shortstop, and apparently Adrian Rodriguez for Texas is playing shortstop. I was like aghast when I heard that one, but I'll need to watch them both defensively, because I mean, I think even to a greater degree, Adrian Rodriguez did not feel like a shortstop to me, but Brendan Lawson at least played there and looked pretty good for me. Like, I thought Brendan Lawson looked fine at shortstop in high school. He is very physical, obviously, but yeah, I'd be fine with him at third.
Yeah, him, Lucas Franco, I'm very much in. And you liked Noah Franco, too. Sounds like more on the mound, obviously.
I like Noah Franco a lot on the mound, and I have massive question marks about Noah Franco as a hitter, is how I would say it.
What did you think in high school?
I think I was more mixed, or maybe even leaned towards him as a hitter in high school. It does feel like most of the scouts I talked to at the time leaned towards him as a hitter. We certainly have seen him more on the hitting side in college. Like, he really didn't throw that many innings for TCU a year ago. But I think both because of how excellent his arm talent is on the mound and because of how far away I think he is as a pure hitter, I'm much more bullish on him as a pitcher. It reminds me a little bit about Nolan McLean at the time when he was coming out of college in Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. He was like this. I think he was even more of a hitter first than a pitcher compared to Noah Franco at the time. He was an outfielder with like huge raw power. Like the batting practices he would show were awesome. And then in game, it felt like this like zero approach, huge swing and miss. Like if he got into a missed pitch, he could send it a mile, but it was going to be a ton of strikeouts. And Noah Franco, I felt, is very similar. Like he's a first baseman slash outfielder who's tremendously physical, like basically the entirety of the TCU lineup. All those guys are huge. And he's got massive power, and I just think that he is not going to make enough contact to get to that power. He swung and missed as much as pretty much any hitter at the event. I'm just going through my notes here to look and see how many.
Had a great freshman year at the plate. I mean, he had 313, 396, 548 last year in a full season.
Yeah, he did have a great year. I don't know. It's a long swing.
Yeah.
It's a long swing. He takes huge hacks. Like, he does not have much of a two-strike adjustment. I don't think he can stay in the zone. Like, he expanded the zone super frequently. Like, I basically didn't see – there was maybe one at-bat where he looked good. He flew out to left on a hard-hit line drive the opposite way that he hit hard. And, like, he obviously has power. But then you look at him on the mound, and he is throwing this, like – he's got this fastball slider combination that is absolutely lethal. Let me see here. Yeah, he was mid 90s up to 98 with a ton of arm side run. His slider is this high spin breaking ball in the upper 80s. It looks like a weapon against both lefties and righties. He only threw one changeup in this look. So I'd like to see that a little bit more. And I think he does look a little reliever-ish. I mean, he pitched in a reliever role in this outing. There is some effort. There is some, like, this harsh fall off. I think the control needs to come as well. So I think there's refinement needed for him on both sides. But he's just kind of this.
He was very fired up, you could see, from his
yes,
signaling to the crowd after his
yes, his bicep flexing towards the opposing bench was maybe not the highlight of his weekend. But, I mean, he looked great on the mound. I don't know. Walk me off this ledge here about Franco, all pitcher, and no, I'm much quicker to push guys off the two-way status than you are. I feel like I've made no secret of that a million times before on this podcast. I just feel like Franco has massive upside on both sides of the ball, and he's also very unrefined on both sides of the ball. And I just think it's very hard to make significant strides when you're splitting your time between the development. And I think, like, if I was in charge of his career, which I'm not, and I shouldn't be, but I would be like, hey, drop the bat. Let's focus on pitching. Let's make you the best pitcher you can be, because I think he has first round pitching talent. I'm not sure he does as a hitter, but
so when he was in, when he was in high school, he was a legitimate two-way prospect. I mean, he's obviously, you know, he's playing both ways at a high level.
He was our preseason first team two-way player from scouting directors.
Yeah, playing both ways at TCU, a very high level college baseball program. I thought at that time the arm was more exciting than the bat. I liked the power, the way the swing worked. Wasn't totally sold on. And for that, you know, for his position, probably, you know, corner outfielder, like he'll play first base more, like, I think, just to protect his arm than anything else. Like, he can go out and play a fine corner outfield if it weren't for the pitching side of it. So I was surprised when you were hearing more from scouts saying, oh, no, we like the bat more than, or we think the bat is ahead of the arm, when I like the arm more. So if some MLB team had drafted him out of high school and signed him, odds are he'd probably just be a hitter right now, right?
Like I think he probably would have struggled and he would be a pitcher now based on what I saw. I mean, maybe they would have initially tried to develop him both ways, but I
don't think so. There's a very few players that are being given the opportunity to be a two-way player. I mean, think
both
how good
Nolan McLean and Bubba Chandler were, and it was very clear which one of those sides of the ball they were better on, and they quickly dropped it. Mason Wynn, did he get a chance to pitch at all, or was he just all hitter?
Barely. Bryce Eldridge was so good on the mound, he didn't get a chance. And he's,
I guess we'll see with Josh Owens is the next player we'll see that with.
I think very few players are given the opportunity to do it. And Noah Franco is a perfect example of why you should allow a player where it's not totally clear yet which side they're going to be better at to give them the opportunity to be a two-way player. Look, there are some guys where it's like, okay, obviously, you know, this pitcher likes to hit, but he's not like really a pro prospect as a hitter. Okay, you got to take that
right
away from him. You got to take the bat out of his hands. But with somebody like Noah Franco, where, again, it seems like more people were leaning in the game, were leaning toward him as a hitter than as a pitcher. If he gets drafted, he's probably a hitter, and you're probably not taking him, you know, for what you're signing him for. Especially, you're not going to all of a sudden say after 1 year, and again, like he just had a really good year as a freshman at TCU at the plate. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're taking that away from him and saying, all right, well, now you're going to go pitch after, you know, let's say he did struggle if he had gone to low A or something, right? As a hitter, you're not taking that away from him. So let these guys go out, you know, and be two-way guys and let them continue to develop, especially in the minor leagues. Like, who cares if you're winning or losing games? Let them develop and figure out which side ends up being their greatest strength. Maybe he can do both too. Like, I think some guys can do it. They're just not given the opportunity, but at least give him some more time to figure out which one he might be better, especially for a guy who, like him, can play, you know, corner, outfield, first base. You can DH him. Like, if it's a catcher, don't do it. Obviously, that's stupid, I think. Or a shortstop, it's really hard to, you know, be a two-way guy. But why are we limiting these guys before, you know, they've proven what they can actually be best at?
Yeah, I'm torn on this because I feel like I'm pretty confident which side he's best at now. So I would be like, okay,
now,
we know.
Sure,
he's gotten
okay,
a chance
fine.
Now. But he's still playing as a two-way. Like, no one's taking the bat away from Noah Franco.
Which is
as
good,
far as I know, right?
Because
now,
if he had gotten drafted out of high school, I don't think somebody's gonna keep him as a two-way player. They might tell him, oh, we're gonna draft you as a two-way player and try to trick him and then say, you're not gonna pitch for us. We're just gonna have you hit.
I feel like most two-way players are very clearly better on one side than the other. And I feel like Noah Franco is maybe one of the good examples of where it was like, even if teams were leaning towards one, like he was always viewed as a pretty legitimate prospect on both sides. And maybe you'd say the same thing with Bryce Eldridge, where like you thought he was a legitimate hitting prospect and pitching prospect. Felt like at the start of the summer for his draft year, most people thought pitcher. And then towards the end, most people thought hitter. But I feel like for almost every two-way player you could probably give me, outside of Ohtani, like there was very clearly one side they were better on. I just feel like the players who are legitimate two-way player prospects,
you know, Ohtani would be a
ball
pitcher if he had grown
is
up
very
in
rare.
Arkansas.
I don't think so.
Because you're seeing him now. It's the same thing we're having with Franco.
Jack Caglione was a legit two-way player for the entirety of his college career, and if he was as good as Ohtani, it seems stupid to even say, but like if he was as good a pitcher as he was a hitter, he'd be doing both right now. I think two-way players at pro ball, like the expectation should not be that you're good on both sides. Like it's so hard to do in college. Sure, I don't mind that Noah Franco is a two-way player in college right now, but I just think if you actually want him to get to the best of his potential, He's almost definitionally not going to get there if he's focused only half the time on
hitting
and pitching.
I think we're having different conversations then, because I'm saying when these guys get drafted out of high school and they have two-way talent, they're almost always immediately shoved into one role or the other, and they take the bat out of their hands or they say, you're not pitching anymore. You're just a hitter. And it limits – I just think it's too early to tell for a lot of players – maybe not a lot of players, but for a good amount of players,
I would
which
probably
side they're
counter
end
and say
up being better at.
I feel like that's probably the right decision for a vast majority of players, and there might be a few examples of players who you maybe would regret doing that with because they are either really good on one side or you were just wrong about the side that they had more potential on. But I mean, I will be really curious how the Royals, or not the Royals, how the Rangers handle Josh Owens this year. Because, like, it sounds like his potential on the mound is a lot better than we expected coming out of high school, entering the draft, and even on draft day. I would guess most of the scouts I ask about Josh Owens would say, yeah, I like talented arm, but we like his upside as a hitter. I don't know if that's the case for most people in the industry who have seen him now since he's signed. And so maybe this will be an example of a player who could get a chance to do both. I don't know exactly how they're planning to handle him, but I would expect him to be used as a two-way player early. Do you know, or have you heard, or do you have any thoughts on the Josh Owens situation? Because he is the example of this currently happening in pro ball right now.
I want to see him. I want to see him do both, and then figure it out and reassess a year from now or 2 years from now and see which way it goes.
Okay. Here's another question I have for you then on that. If it turns out that the pitching is just not going to happen, do you feel like you've maybe lost some player development time and opportunity for him to become the best hitter he can be by doing the two-way thing? Because you're getting fewer at-bats. And I think it's like at a certain point, it's like really crucial for hitters to get a lot of at-bats against good competition to become the best hitters they can be. And I do wonder, like, if you get that, if you get the decision wrong, are you hurting a player by having them do the two-way factor for too long? Like, can it run the opposite direction? That would be my concern.
Or you get probably, what, 300-400 at-bats anyway, right?
I don't know. Don't see it too much.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you're going to, if you let him be a true two-way player, then no, I don't think you're really going to cost him much, if anything. Obviously it takes more physical demand on your body, so that's part of the calculations you have to make. But no, I think more guys should get the chance to do it.
This is like the one topic that me and you consistently disagree on, so it's fun to broach every time.
Well, I thought Noah Franco was the perfect opportunity to bring it up.
Yeah,
and
let him pitch.
And because now we have another two-way player reclassifying from 2027 to 2026. So Jared Grindlinger, who is a left-handed pitcher and an outfielder at Huntington Beach High School in Southern California, is the number three, was now, I guess I should say, the number three high school player in the 2027 class, is reclassifying, and he's going to be eligible for the 2026 draft.
Take the bat out of his hand.
If this guy...
I'm just kidding. I have like a slight lean towards pitcher, but I don't have a strong lean either way with him right now. So yeah, break him down for us. Ben has a piece with good video on Jared too, if you guys want to actually see the player we're talking about on the site. So check that out if you haven't.
I think I said it when he was 15. This is the best left-handed pitcher I've seen at this age since Thomas White, who was in the 2023 class. He was young for the 2027 high school class. I mean, he's still 16 years old. He turned 17 in April. I would still say
it'd be like 17.3 or something on draft day, something ridiculous. Him and Rocco Maniscalco just breaking draft models.
Yeah, I think Maniscalco is like a couple weeks younger than him, but he is, I would still probably say the same thing at his age, at 16, best left-handed pitcher since Thomas White at that age. Now, look, there's obviously a bunch of other left-handed pitchers who we have in the first round range right now, with Carson Bolamon, he's very old for the class. He's already 19, right? And Gio Rojas and Logan Schmidt, who is another reclass guy from 2027 to 2026. So maybe more like even comparison there. But I think... I'm just tough, even just as a left-handed pitcher, I think Jared Grindlinger fits right in with those guys. Like, Logan Schmidt is probably the easiest comparison just from the pitching side, because they both are close together in age, but more the most similar in style to Logan Schmidt throws about a mile an hour harder at his peak than compared to Grindlinger, like up to 97 versus 96. Both have really good changeups. I think Grindlinger's breaking ball is ahead of Schmidt right now, and they both have very good feel for pitching. I think Grindlinger's even leaner, more room to fill out, more upside to throw even harder, right? He's 6'3", 185. Just a really easy delivery, starter look, starter repertoire, like chance for three plus or better pitches, like great feel for mixing, matching, right? Like he's grown up in a baseball family. His older brother, Trent Grindlinger, is a freshman at freshman catcher at Tennessee. He was one of the top guys to get to college last year. So even though it's like a late reclass, all these guys, all the scouts have seen him, I'm sure, from just following his brother Trent last year in high school, and just him, Jared, being such a famous player at such a young age and just being in Southern California. Like you just see all different classes at once. And he also pitched on the 18U national team last year. So people saw him there as one of two, I guess, what previously two underclassmen on that team. The other was Will Brick, the catcher on that team, who also is now in the 2026 class. So
all the reclasses are hearing how great the 2026 class is. And they're like, okay, bet, I'm going to go compete with these guys. I love it.
Yeah, we got him. I mean, Schmidt did it earlier in the year or in the process. Maniscalco. Brick. There's one I'm blanking on right now. Oh, it's killing me.
Scan down our list and see. Yeah, we have had a lot. Is it a hitter or a pitcher?
Oh, man. I literally just wrote about it today. And I can't believe I'm.
Oh, well, I have your just piece compelling. Caden McCarthy.
Audio. Of Caden course, McCarthy. Caden McCarthy. Yeah, right. From right-handed pitcher from
Vermont.
Vermont. So it's. I mean, I think he's a first-round talent as a pitcher. Now, first-round talent as a pitcher. Do you go in the first round as a high school pitcher? Two different questions. But also, this guy's a really good hitter. I mean, he almost never swung and missed last summer. I think he has good defensive instincts. Does he have like the raw foot speed for center field versus corner outfield? I don't know. Maybe he ends up being more corner outfield just because of the raw foot speed. But also, like, I don't know, he's still 16. I'll have to see how he's running this year. And, you know, you can see the video I posted, a pretty big home run deep into the trees. And there's definitely some power in there, too, to go with obvious feel for the barrel. So, like, man, I don't know how you draft a 16-year-old, or I guess it'll be 17, and say definitively, like, a guy who's as good as he is on both sides of the ball, and just say, no, we're going to take away the bat, or we only want you this doing one or the other. Look, I don't know exactly, like, which one he wants to do in pro ball. Like, he certainly has all the leverage to, you know, dictate to a certain extent, at least until he signs. Right, because then the team can just say, "Well, you're doing this or that." Like then they have the control. But if he can go at least go into the draft negotiation process and say, "Hey, if he wants to continue to be a two way player to do that, and if I'm drafting him, yeah, I love him as a pitcher, but I wouldn't. Man, he's a really good hitting prospect too. Like he'd be
to your point about his hitter. To your point about his contact skills, I pulled up all of the 2025 data we have for him with Synergy. It's 24 games, 68 plate appearances. How many whiffs would you guess that he had in that sample?
Out of how many?
So total swings and misses. 68 plate appearances. Do you want the swings? I have the number of swings he took that we have. 87 swings. How many misses?
Two.
Three. He missed three times, which is the same amount of swings and misses that Noah Franco had in his first at bat. Last weekend. Wow. Different competition, maybe a mean comparison.
They play in 2027, like mostly 2027 high school.
Three whiffs is crazy, though, regardless.
Oh, yeah. That's like, what I'm saying. It's like
over the whole summer. Like we saw.
Grady it's not Emerson. Like this is some like little.
You we know, saw Grady Emerson miss three times in two games last Friday. So, like, even best pure hitter in this class facing non elite high school pitching swung and missed. Like I think that number is still
baseball America
extreme enough that it, like
maybe the pressure got to him.
No, he still performed really well, but it's just kind of shocking to see that number for a player who is. I mean, how tall is he? 6'3".
Yeah, he's that's what I'm saying. It's he's very, not like a little
very uncommon
Cunningham. Right. Like I don't know, Cason Cunningham's a great hitter, but like like short levels, short strike zone. Yeah, you usually see guys who are you know the longer limbs. Not that he's like ultra lanky or anything like that, but you don't typically see guys like that who are just that elite in terms of the barrel accuracy that they have.
The one thing that stands out to me when just looking at Jared is, like, he is going to put on monstrous amount of strength and mass, and how that transforms his profile on either side of the ball is going to be scary, because you mentioned the power he's shown now. I mean, his frame can add 30 more pounds of weight
pretty
comfortably, I would imagine. Like Logan Schmidt, here we're talking about, is currently listed 30 pounds heavier, maybe an inch taller.
Carson Bolamon, too, is just like a physically close to mature guy right now.
Yeah. So just thinking about what that physical projection is going to do, some would say the future projection is going to do to his game on either side is really exciting to think about. Okay. So you're basically saying you are excited about his ability. You want him to continue doing the two-way factor as long as possible, see which one looks better. And if he keeps having success, then maybe he'll just keep being a two-way player for forever. Be the second one.
He can be, I think he has a talent to do it. And it's a good, he's in a good position to do it. It's like, okay, you could put him potentially, I don't know if his bat's going to be good enough for first base, right? Or like, you know, obviously maybe like DH if he's an actual pitcher in the big leagues, but if it is, ooh.
I mean, how would you compare him to a guy like Bryce Eldridge, who had some similar traits, maybe a little bit more, maybe a lot more physically advanced at the same time, the time of their draft, different ages, obviously, but first base pitcher is right-handed pitcher for Bryce Eldridge, left-handed pitcher for Grindlinger.
Yeah.
And maybe even, I don't know what you think about Coleman Borthwick two-way, but I feel like having Jared Grindlinger and Coleman Borthwick, kind of side by side is interesting, because in some ways they're very similar because of the two-way factor, but they're also massively different in terms of how they look in their
mass,
current games.
Yes.
Yeah, their size. Like Borthwick is one of the most physical players in the class. I think Borthwick has maybe 70 pounds on Jared Grindlinger in addition to like a full year of age. But I mean, the way some scouts talk about Coleman Borthwick as a hitter, they would be inclined to go with you on like the two-way discussion. So that one will be interesting as well.
Borthwick has huge raw power. That one's tough for me because I love him as a pitcher. I'm not quite as high as a hitter with him, where, and also he's going to be as like surprisingly nimble and athletic as he is at third base. What is it, like 6'4", 250 at least.
Right?
Like,
at least.
That's, he's not getting any.
We have him listed as
6'6",
255. So if he was a couple inches shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah,
giving him credit for.
Yeah,
that's tough to probably play anywhere as a position player other than first base. So that would
Do you remember how big Austin Riley was in high school?
Not that big, I don't think.
I have no memory of that. He definitely wasn't that tall. I don't know if he was that heavy. He was thick, but I don't know. I don't think he was that big.
Yeah, I mean, Eldridge was. He's also like a year plus probably older than where. Grindlinger is right now in the process, so different there. Yeah, I don't know.
Austin Riley is currently listed at 6'2", 225, so
he's probably not.
He would have been 30 pounds heavier in high school.
and four inches taller.
right, yeah. Okay, well, it's kind of crazy to just think about the talent of this class getting even better, but adding another first round talent, I mean, maybe makes you feel a little bit better about your Tyler Bell injury news. You hear about that, Ben? We haven't talked about it, but it happened week one. I know Tyler Bell's kind of your guy, so I'm hopeful that he can get back on the field and play, but kind of discouraging to get injured and hurt your shoulder day one.
You think it might miss the whole year?
I don't know. I feel like no one really knows at this point, but it seems
out
not ideal.
Which is definitely not good.
It's his non-throwing shoulder, I guess, is the glimmer of hope here. But yeah,
what, Jace LaViolette came back and played with the what was his injury? Like a broken.
We got
hand
hit on
or
the
something.
Knuckle. He had like a broken hand and played through that. I don't know if it was a hand, broken finger, broken. I don't know, something.
Yeah.
His knuckle did not look good. I was shocked that he played anymore after getting hit there.
That was stunning to see, but it's a shoulder injury, right, for Bell.
Yeah.
What are the Diamondbacks pick this year? just plug him in there.
hey, they pick 15th, looks like, so.
Okay, okay.
That could happen.
It's like right where we have them right now, right?
Yeah, I think two spots away from where we have them, so. Okay. Well, that was a fun convo today, Ben. Anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
No, glad to have baseball back.
Yeah, probably a lot more fun of a podcast to listen to when we're actually talking about things we just saw and watched, so.
You don't want to break down spring training video.
Oh, no. Live. Hey, I will say, I feel like I've been seeing far better video quality from all of the beat writers who are out at the backfields and taking videos on their cell phones for like the 2 weeks of the year where they do that. Like previously it was like miles away. You can't see anything. Now they're actually getting a little closer to the action. So I appreciate that at least.
You're not nostalgic for the old days of Twitter, phone, iPhone 3 pics from 100 yards away, zoomed or focused on the chain link fence with a blurry player.
Most of the time it feels like video that was just shot from where their seats are in the press box. And they were like, I'll just take it from here. No, I don't care about that. I don't really care about MLB spring training at all. Happy for those people who really like it. But, you know, we got real baseball to watch. High school baseball and college baseball.
I like when there's somebody will post a video and it'll be a hitter. Like, maybe it'll be a video of a pitcher striking out a guy. And the video will be about the pitcher. And then somebody will complain about the hitter being like, oh, this guy looks terrible. His timing looks off. It's like, yeah, it's like February 19th. Like, this is why
the timing is supposed to be off. This is the whole training. Point of the process.
That's why they do this for 6 weeks.
I couldn't tell if this was a parody or a joke, but there was some tweet that blew up where someone was like crucifying Bryce Harper's bat speed or something.
Oh, no.
Like going through the motions. Like, it's like, oh, what are we doing here?
Or from like BP too, where it's like, because somebody will post, you know, like in there the was, first, I think Jesus might have posted the video and it's like of Josuar Gonzalez with a Giant. And it's like, yeah, that's probably his first round of BP where it's like getting loose and like, or like working on something where they're like, hey, do this, like hit it the opposite way. Right, we want you to just like do this specific thing, like not take your A game swing because like Baseball America is here taking a video of you on February 17th. Like, that's not
the one I saw that was similar to that was hilarious. It was like a montage of cuts from the Braves. It was Ozzie Albies, Matt Chapman, and they were both like fairly easy swings, like getting loose. It looked like what you would see for a first round of BP. And then it cuts to Ronald Acuna Jr. like full effort swing. And like Ronald Acuna Jr.'s bat speed, full speed is insane. So like that contrasted with those two. And people were talking about like Ozzie Albies and Matt Chapman are cooked because their bats are so slow. I'm like, you guys are ridiculous. But Ronald Acuna does have crazy bat speed. So it was fun to see that.
Yeah, he's all right.
He's pretty good.
His switch hitting little brother too is pretty good. Did you see that where Chris Getz, the GM of the White Sox, like I think it was like four different times, referred to Luis Angel Acuña
as a switch hitter.
Switch hitter.
Yeah, I did see that.
That's it's bad, but also I'm not defending it. But there are definitely guys where I probably seen them. And I, for some reason in my brain, I still think of them.
I have 100% done the same thing.
A left-handed pitcher when he's right-handed, or this guy's a left-handed hitter when he's actually a right-handed hitter.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it's just like a mental, for whatever reason, out of like a, you know, if you take 1,000 players, there's probably like two or three guys that I do that with. But I also didn't just trade for one of those players.
Yeah. So. I'm trying to think. There's definitely a player that I always was like in my head thinking that they were a switch hitter and they never really were. So I've had the same thing. I guess the one question I would have with this Chris Getz situation is like, who was the staffer who did not take him aside after the first time he said it and said like, hey, you said switch hitter by accident? Cause this was over like four different interviews, different times.
Yeah.
Right?
But you probably wouldn't even notice it. Like, oh, like you're not like hanging on every
word. Or like the reporters who heard it and like know that he's not a switch hitter. Maybe the reporters didn't know either, but like,
but if you say it in like different contexts or like different settings, I don't know.
Okay, once you heard the first time, maybe it's like, oh, he misspoke. Okay, no big deal. We all misspeak. We do a podcast every week. I probably misspeak every week. The second time, I feel like someone would be like, hey, he's now said this twice. I feel like as a reporter, I'd be like, hey, like, out of interest, I'd be like, is he like currently switch hitting now? Is this like a new development we should be aware of? Like, how did no one bring this up to him prior to the fourth? And even after the fourth time, it only got buzz when someone like went back through and looked at it all, right? It's not like at that fourth instance, like the reporters in the scrum were like, hey, you know, you keep calling him a switch hitter. Like, this was something that happened online, correct?
I feel like he could be a switch hitter. Like, he feels like somebody you could think of as a like a little here comes Ben. Guy.
Connelly's been like two-way player forever. He wants everyone to switch hit now.
No, I'm not saying he should switch hit, but I can see where like the brain lap somehow comes in.
Right, right.
I'm just saying I can empathize because I do that in my mind with players. I agree, every now and then. But also
it definitely is it's a worse look though when you're the GM and you just trade for him. Yeah. So well, I mean, is that something that actually would be concerning to you or mostly just kind of funny? I think it's just kind of funny.
I'm not a White Sox fan, so it's just kind of funny. If I were a White Sox fan, I might be like, Most of it's just like a brain lapse, but
yeah. Hey, we're all getting into midseason form here.
Not the worst thing that anyone in baseball has done this month,
or done over the last week. Okay. All right. Well, fun episode, Ben. Glad baseball's back. Thanks for hanging out with us, everyone. Thanks for supporting BA. As always, again, if you want to review the show, leave us a rating wherever you listen. We really appreciate it. That would help us out. That'd be awesome. Thank you, guys. We'll be back here next week to talk about more real live baseball. For Ben, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody.
You know that goal you set at the start of the year? You can still do it. Whether you're committed to a thru hike with friends, lifting heavier, or simply walking more. It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. Because quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, simplify your progress with just 2 scoops of the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS. KACHAVA.com, code NEWS.